Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
We're on our third week of our series called Trapped, and we're looking at the traps that the devil tries to lure us into and then bring us into bondage. We want to remind everyone, next week, set your clocks back and wear your camel, all right? Wear your camel. Now, maybe some of you, this is your first time with us today, and we want to welcome you. We want you to know we're glad you're here, and you might be feeling, I wish I was wearing camel right now. I wish I blended in so no one could see me. You know, I really don't want to be seen here, and that's fine. You know, we don't want to point you out. We're not going to embarrass you or anything. We just want you to know we are so glad you're here, and this is a safe place. If you've got questions about God, questions about our church, you can learn about that. Just feel free to come. If you are really curious, I invite you to join us on Sunday nights in November, starting November 22nd. We're going to have our Destiny class, and that Destiny class will teach you about God. It'll teach you about our church, just who we are, and what God's plan is for your life. Okay, if you take out your bulletin this morning, and inside the bulletin are your sermon notes along with your homework, okay? The homework is for you to do during this week, part of your devotions, part of your discipleship time. That's also what our life groups use. And on your notes in the sermon section, it says, the devil lures us into his traps by believing lies. And the way out of the trap is to reject the lie and embrace the truth. Jesus said in John 8:32, the truth will set you free. Embracing the truth is what sets us free from the devil's traps. And this morning, we're going to look at the performance trap as it pertains to the life of the rich young ruler. And we're going to look in Matthew 18, and take a look in your notes. What is the lie of the performance trap? The lie of the performance trap is that my action, what I do, the things that I do, my action produces satisfaction. If I accomplish enough, acquire enough, accumulate enough, if I do enough, I'll be satisfied. What I do gives me fulfillment. It gives me peace. It gives me rest. It satisfies me. My action makes me a success. That is the lie of the performance trap. There are two arenas that the performance trap kind of plays out in, and we see both of these in the story of the rich young ruler. Now, some of you might say, well, Craig, where is he called the rich young ruler? Because if you read Matthew 19, it doesn't call him the rich young ruler. Well, if we play a little bit of detective, we pick up he's a rich young ruler because in verse 20, it says he's young. You can just jot this down on the side of your notes if you want. Verse 20, it says he's young. In verse 22, it says he has many possessions. And then in Luke 18, which is a parallel passage, and what a parallel passage is, it's where another gospel writes about the same event, but it maybe gives the same or some different details. It tells us in there that he's a ruler. So you combine it all together, he's a rich young ruler. And let's pick up our story in Matthew 19, verse 16 today. It says, behold, one came and said to him, referring to Jesus, he said to Jesus, good teacher, what good thing shall I do that I may have eternal life? So Jesus said to him, why do you call me good? No one is good but one, that is God. But if you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. And let's just pause right here. Jesus asked the man, why do you call me good? Because what Jesus is saying is, there is only one person who's good, and that is God. And so why are you giving me a description saying I'm good when God is the only one who fits that? Some people would say, well, this proves right here that Jesus isn't God because Jesus didn't say he was God. However, if you notice carefully, Jesus never said that he wasn't good. He never said that he wasn't God. Jesus just asked the man, why do you call me good? Because here's the thing. This man, the rich young ruler, saw Jesus as being only a human. He didn't see Jesus as being God. And yet in this man's eyes, he felt that humans are good. We are good in and of ourselves, and we can work our way to heaven. We can get our way to heaven by how we live our lives. And so Jesus is trying to point out, hey, no one is good. All mankind is sinners. No one's good. Only God is good. And because you only see me as a man, why do you call me good? And so that's why Jesus says that. We pick it up in verse 18. The rich young ruler said to Jesus, which commandments should I keep? Jesus said, you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, honor your father and mother, and you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The young man said to Jesus, all these things I have kept from my youth. What do I still lack? You see, in this man's mind, he was good. He was great. He was doing everything he needed to do. And here's the first arena. If you're taking notes this morning, the two arenas of the performance trap, the first arena is the spiritual arena. In our spiritual lives, our relationship to God. And what the performance trap says is that my action satisfies God's justice. You see, the wages of sin is death. God cannot stand in the presence of sin. You and I cannot appear before God as sinners. But this man felt what I do, my actions can make me righteous, and it satisfies God's justice, so I can be in God's presence by what I do, by the good works that I perform in my life. He felt that his actions made him righteous, that they gained God's approval and affirmation. Now, there are millions of people around the world who believe that today. Millions of people. They believe if I am a good person, if I just do enough good things, I can get to heaven. However, that is not true. We see a lot of people, they'll say, you know what? If I give to charity, if I help the poor, if I am a great humanitarian, a philanthropist, and I help my fellow man, then that can get me to heaven. Some people would say, well, hey, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. I believe he's real. I do good things. I'm a moral person. I'm not an axe murderer. You know, I don't sell drugs. I don't do all these horrible things that you hear about in the news. I'm a good person. I'm doing great. That can get me to heaven. And then there's other people, they go the church route. They're very, very religious. They go to church, they pray, you know, they've been baptized, they take communion, they do all the things that their church tells them to do. And what people do is they try with their goodness, with their good works, to try to destroy sin in their life. And so they, you know, they're trying to take their works and beat sin, but it doesn't really work. Because our good works do not gain us forgiveness. And it doesn't matter how much we do. It doesn't matter how we try to stack our works together and say, man, look at what I've done. Look how great. It doesn't matter. None of our good works destroy sin. Sin is still strong and active in our life. There is only one thing that can take care of our sin problem, and that is the blood of Jesus Christ. You see, Jesus died on the cross for our sin. And when he was nailed to those beams, he took sin in his body. And he destroyed sin. Jesus' death on the cross is what provides forgiveness for our sin. There is nothing that you and I can do that gets rid of the sin problem in our life. Nothing. And yet people all around the world think, if I'm just good enough, I can work my way to heaven. But that's not true. You have to realize there is nothing in your power. There is no amount of good works. It's not if my good works outweigh my bad works. What would happen if a criminal stood before a judge with 50,000 crimes against the law? What would that judge do? Put him in prison or give him a life sentence or the death sentence, one or the other. And here's the thing. How many times a day does a person sin on average? How many times a day? Boy, you guys are quiet. Are you sleeping? Did you set your clocks ahead this morning? Come on, talk to me. How many times a day does the average person sin? More than once, someone said. Several. If you only sin three times a day, would you be a pretty good person? I mean, that's kicking the cat once you got mad. That's, you know, giving some sign language to that driver who cut you off. You know, and maybe telling you just a little white lie or something like that. Or, you know, something, you know, three sins a day. But if you add that up in 1 year's time, that's over 1,000 sins after 365 days. And if you live a normal lifespan of, say, 70 years, that's 70,000 sins, 70,000 crimes against God's law. And yet we think we can do enough good to balance out 70,000 crimes for a good person. For a good person. That's why Jesus said, "No one is good. We are sinners, and we have a problem that only God can fix." Jesus is perfect. And when he died, he offers his righteousness to us. We have to accept his righteousness. A few moments from now, at the close of our service, if you haven't accepted God's offer of forgiveness, if you haven't accepted his righteousness, we're going to give you an opportunity to do that. So now, let's go on here. And by the way, I want to show you something. The law, keeping things, doesn't save us. Paul wrote this to the Roman Christians. Romans chapter 9, you can write this down in your notes. You can look at it later on today. Romans chapter 9, verse 31, and then chapter 10, verses 1 to 4. This is what it says in the New Living Translation. "But the people of Israel, who tried so hard to get right with God by keeping the law, never," say never with me, "never succeeded. Dear brothers and sisters, the longing of my heart and my prayer is for the people of Israel to be saved. I know what enthusiasm they have for God, but it is misdirected zeal, for they don't understand God's way of making people right with himself. Refusing to accept God's way, they cling to their own way of getting right with God by trying to keep the law, by trying to do good things. For Christ has already accomplished the purpose for which the law was given. As a result, all who believe in him are made right with God." You see what he said? It doesn't matter how much enthusiasm, this zeal they have. It doesn't matter how sincere you are at trying to be good and think you're right. Your good works don't cut it. Only by believing what Jesus did for you can you be saved. We can't get right with God through our own efforts. Now, you say, "Craig, if that's true, why did Jesus tell this guy, the rich young ruler, to do something?" Because he says, if you just sell everything you have, take a look at verse 21 in chapter 19. Jesus said, if you want to be perfect, go sell what you have, give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. And come follow me. But when the man heard that, he went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. Here's the thing. Your works, take a look in your notes this morning. Works are the result of your salvation, not the cause. What you and I do does not cause us to be saved, does not cause us to be forgiven. Works are the result. Works, my works and actions, are the result of what I believe. I believe something, and therefore I do it. For example, if I told you today, if you and I believed that right after church, if we went out to our cars and started our cars and they would blow up, if we believed that, we wouldn't start our car, would we? No. If you believed that dialing 1-800-MILLIONAIRE and making that call would give you $1 million, how many of you would be on the phone right now? Yeah, you'd say, you know what, Pastor, I'll listen to you later. I'll get caught up in 2 minutes. Let me go make that phone call, okay? If we really believed something, our belief causes us to produce actions. And here's the thing Jesus was trying to do with this rich young ruler. He wanted this young man to believe that God was more important than money and that God was more important than his position that he had worked so hard to attain. You see, the rich young ruler, Jesus wanted him to follow the first commandment, which is have no other gods before me. But he had other gods. His gods was his money, was his possessions. He was very rich, and that was more important to him than God. Also his position. He was young. He had risen to the ranks somehow, some way, and he is now a respected leader in the community. He has affluence. He has influence. He has notoriety, and he doesn't want to give up what he's accomplished and what he's accumulated. And he thinks that these things are going to make me happy. And God says, no, they're not. I need to be first place in your life. And if you give away your gods, your position, and you give away your money, if you really believe God is the most important thing, then that belief, you as you flesh it out and you give everything away, you'll put God first. That's why Jesus told him to do those things, because he was trying to get to his heart. At what did he really believe was the most important thing in his life? And so it's this area, this spiritual arena, that we see the rich young ruler falling short in the performance trap. He was trying to gain God's favor by what he did. Now, there's a second arena, and if you're taking notes this morning, write it down. It's the physical arena. It's our life. And what the physical arena says, it says, my accomplishments, my acquisitions fulfill me. They give me the approval and affirmation of others. What I do makes me a success. We do this sometimes in our life. Maybe we want to appear successful. We want to look like we've made it, we've arrived, we want to look important. And so we do different things to try to show that. Maybe we want this certain kind of vehicle. And if we think if we have this vehicle, then I have arrived, then I have attained, then I, you know, now I've made it, okay? And so we take out a car loan, and some people, they can't afford it, but they do it anyway. Even if you can afford the loan, you're relying on what this car brings you to add to your image, what you accumulate, what you have to give you value, to give you significance, to make you a success. But it doesn't work. Here's the thing. If you drive a brand new Ford F-150 or a Ferrari, that does not make you any different than driving a 1975 Gremlin. You might get there faster in the Ferrari, okay? But here's the thing. You are the same person regardless of the vehicle you drove to church today. Having a different vehicle doesn't make you any different. You are the same person on the inside. And yet we try so hard but to make ourselves feel significant and valued and worthwhile and successful by what we do and what we have. When I was young, when I was a kid, when I was in high school, I was big time in the performance trap. I had to have straight A's, had to be the best in football and golf and the sports I played, in music and choir and band, and I was doing all these things, and I was trying to make all this money, and I went to college, and I continued it. I got into ministry, and it's trying to, you know, you want to be a success and just have a big youth group. I started in youth ministry, and I was trying to feel like a success by accumulating and accomplishing a lot of things. And I have to be careful today that I don't get caught in the performance trap. And it's something that a lot of us can fall into, but our action does not produce satisfaction. Because no matter how much you accomplish, no matter how much you have, it's never enough. I know it from my experience. And when you look at the rich young ruler, It was in his experience. And verse 22, despite his success, despite he's risen to the top and he's now a ruler, despite the fact that he's rich and he has a lot of possessions, and despite the fact that he's a pretty good person, he tries a lot of things, he says to Jesus, "What do I still lack? What am I missing? I don't get it. I've done all these things. I've accomplished all these things. I've gained all these things, but I'm missing something in my life. What is it?" And the performance trap says, my action produces satisfaction, but it doesn't. And Jesus taught this in Luke chapter 12, verse 15. Jesus said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." Did you catch that? Your life, my life, it does not consist, it's not made up of accumulating lots of stuff, lots of wealth, lots of influence and affluence in the community. It's not based upon what other people think or our image or how much, you know, we've gained. Life does not consist of that. Here's the truth. If the lie is my action produces satisfaction, what's the truth? If you're taking notes this morning, God is our source. God is the source of our success. He's the source of our worth. He's the source of our righteousness. God is the source of everything. I know that because I was religious. I went to church. I did everything my church told me to do, and I was a good person. But yet, still, God seemed like he was a million miles away. God felt like he was far off in outer space. And I was very religious. And yet, I knew I was missing something. And when I learned that it's not the things that I do, but it's what Jesus Christ has done, that when Jesus gave his life to pay the wages of sin, what is the wages of sin? It's death. Jesus took the death penalty on himself. And he died in my place. And what I have to do is I have to put my trust and my faith not in what I do, not in my church, my good deeds, my actions, but instead of his action of dying on the cross. And I put Jesus first place in my life, which what Jesus was trying to get at in the rich young ruler. When I do that, that's what produces satisfaction. And you know, and when I gave my life to Christ, God came near. No longer was he distant, but Jesus was up close and personal. And that's what God wants for all of us. He wants all of us to realize it's through the cross, it's through the nail-pierced hands, it's through Jesus' body that sin was destroyed and it doesn't have a hold on our lives any longer. God is our source of righteousness. Take a look in your notes. Your righteousness comes from Christ. Your righteousness comes from Christ. Only Jesus lived a pure, sinless life. And so he died. And here's the thing. Because of that, if you put your faith, your belief in him, and you make him first place, you surrender control of your life, he says, "I will give you forgiveness. I'll give you my righteousness. You now have God's approval. You now are affirmed by God because God doesn't look at you anymore and sees your attempts of righteousness. God looks at me. He sees me because I'm living inside of you." Christ is our source of righteousness. Also, Jesus is the source in the physical arena. In your notes, your value has already been determined by what God paid for you. God paid the price of his son. When you think about that, how many of you would offer your child to die for the rest of the world? Would you do that? Especially the kind of death Jesus died. Having 9-inch nails driven into his hands and his feet. I mean, you talk about a painful death. Whipped, beaten, suffered, crucified, his hair pulled out, people making fun of him. He's stripped down with no clothes on. I mean, a humiliating, torturous death. That's the price God paid for you. That's how much you're worth. Your value is priceless. There's nothing you do that makes you any more important. You can't earning more money, having more stuff, being more successful isn't going to make you any more significant. The price Jesus paid makes you valuable. What about success then? In your notes, your success is determined by what you allow God to do through you. Your success is determined by what you allow God to do through you. Here's the thing. If Jesus is our source, he's our source of righteousness, but he's also, do you realize he's the source of your talent and ability? You can think, you can talk, you can work, you can do because God gives you the ability. If he wanted to, he could take it all away and you could be a vegetable. Not move, not think, not speak, do nothing. Everything, all of your abilities come from God. Your money comes from God. Your ability to work, to make money, comes from God. Your possessions, God has allowed you to have them and not let them be wiped out by a tornado or by a fire. God has given you everything. God is our source of everything in our life. And because of that, since my money's not my own, and my time is not my own, my talent's not my own, then it's God's. If God says, Craig, give it, then I should give it. And if I give it, I'm a success. If I disobey and I don't give whatever God says to give, then I'm a failure. My success depends upon what I give back to others. This isn't in your notes. I want you to write this down, though. Greatness comes from what we give, not what we gain. Greatness comes from what we give, not what we gain. If I allow God to work through me, to give through me, to work through me, and I'm obeying him and living my life, putting him first, then I'm a success in life. My question for all of us today is, are we obeying what God has prompted us to do? There are some things that are listed right in the Bible. Are we obeying the commandments, the things God lists in the Bible? And then those nudges, those impressions, the things God lays on our heart, are we listening to them? Because only then can we be a success. The rich young ruler, that was his problem. In his case, God said, I want you to give everything. Very few people are asked to do that. But if God did say that, would you do it? Can you even give the little thing he's asking you today? Or do you say, it's mine. I'm the source. This is what produces satisfaction. Friends, there's only one thing that matters. If you obey God and give him everything, someday he'll say to you, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into my joy. If you want satisfaction in your life, God needs to be your source of everything.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us, casperfaith@gmail.com, or call us at 307-265-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.